Strangers and Aliens, Episode 46, The Wonderful World of Disney, with special guest Daniel Butcher of BetweenDisney.com. Brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/strangers. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend, Plumber. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Strangers and Aliens podcast. I'm Ben Avery and I'm here once again with my two, my two awesome co-hosts.
We're also, so glad that you didn't use the word lovely.
Well, you know, you are lovely people.
I wouldn't mind being lovely.
Well, just so we can get past this segment, I'm Dr. Jace and the lovely Steve MacDonald.
Awesome. And we are also joined with a fourth person. We have an other guy who is joining us right now from the Sci-Fi Christian, and that is Daniel Butcher. Welcome.
So is this like the other guy joining Ben and the other guys?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So we usually butcher your name, but this time we'll get it right.
Well, you very know, nice. For a long while I used to say Daniel Radcliffe.
That hurts.
As long as it's Dr. Other Guy, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. I think that Daniel Radcliffe is a legitimate mistake to make, though. Like, that's a real person.
Yeah, but so is Kobe Radcliffe. So I just don't want to be associated with him necessarily.
Hey.
You are associated with him.
Oh, that's right. He is my partner, isn't he?
Yeah. He is Kobe your Rush. Ally against the coup that's happening over on your end.
You know, the ironic thing is since Ben has been back more, I sometimes feel more in line with Ben than Kobe.
I always feel more in line with Ben than Kobe.
But come on. Except for the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers thing. Kobe's like gold.
No, it's the John Carter thing that killed me on him.
Well, that makes more sense. If Steve is disagreeing with you guys, then I will probably agree with you guys because I don't really know. But I just have to imagine that Steve's wrong.
Nice. Yeah, I got a tattoo, one of those gangsta tattoos right across my belly that just says wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
I am going to give him credit, though, in the John Carter argument because at least he watched it.
Yes, but what turned me off was that he wouldn't watch it because it didn't make enough money.
That's... Yeah, and Andrew Stanton isn't influential because it was quote unquote a bomb. So.
Yeah. So,
well, I still haven't seen it, and it's on my Netflix to see. But I thought the advertising for it was really boring.
Oh, it is pathetic what they did to that thing. There was just no true support for it. When you look at how much the budget for that movie was, and the fact that they didn't really put anything behind it. Except few words, it's really, really sad. And there's a whole bunch of reasons for why they did or didn't support it, but
it was ridiculous. And they got Led Zeppelin's Kashmir as the background music for it, and it's just like this rocking thing, and you're seeing all these clips from it, and then you're like, wow, I want to buy the novelization of it. Oh, it's not. They don't have. I want to buy the toy. They don't have any toys. How about the trading card? No, there are no trading cards.
Don't even get me started on the toys. Because as much as that budget is for that movie, and your target, one of the big targets is the 8 to 12 year old boy, and there's no toy. Yeah, one of my high horse things is like Transformers 2 and 3.
Oh.
I could never let an 8-year-old watch that, but so many toys come out for those.
Yeah.
So, well, because that's such a great segue into our actual topic of the day, which is Disney animated movies. Right. Ben, well, where do you want to go with that?
Well, I want to explain why Daniel's here, first of all.
Yeah, that's good.
And part of that is that the feud is over. It has to be, because we can't figure out who won the feud from the parameters we set. So
can we not find out who got more votes?
I tried. And
don't tell us, huh?
Yeah. There's,
I mean,
just,
we can't figure out how many more votes we got than them. So,
right.
I'm sorry, guys. Our Ben voted like 5 times this year, so clearly
Ben voted every day. So,
well, I had my students voting every day, so we had to vote every day.
That's right.
Is that ethical?
My kids out of school so they could vote all day.
It's only unethical if I threaten F's on them.
Right, but if you imply the F, it's okay.
Yeah, if I just imply it, then it's fine.
So the feud is done.
Especially if it's not in the syllabus or on paper anywhere.
Right, yeah. If it's just in the air.
Yeah, exactly.
It just hangs over them, yeah. So the feud is done, and I actually recorded yesterday an episode with them about Aquaman, which was fun and long and interesting, and people who don't like Aquaman, you should still listen to it because you might change your mind. But one of the reasons we brought Daniel in today was because Jace suggested an episode of talking about some of our favorite animated Disney movies, and I had wanted to ever since I found out that Daniel has a blog and... well, there's a Facebook group too, but it's called Between Disney. And then he started talking about Disney stuff on the Sci-Fi Christian, which I listen to regularly. And he's a walking encyclopedia. You know, Matt needs Wikipedia over there to help him out, but Daniel, he's just got it there in his head. So I wanted to invite him.
I read way too many books. That's the problem.
It's not a problem. It's good.
Yeah, that's because Ben has that same addiction we're trying to work with him on.
Yeah, so. There's nothing wrong with it, man. There's nothing wrong. You can stop anytime you want, right? Me too.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I can't.
Nope. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about some of our favorite animated Disney movies, some of our least favorite animated Disney movies, and then talk about some spiritual lessons that you can pull or spiritual themes that you can find in some of these Disney movies as you're watching them. And there'll be both negative and positive from there. And yeah, so I think we should probably just go ahead and get started.
So what in this format, what happens if someone brings something up that is on, like if I brought up something on my good list and someone else had it on their bad list?
We'll argue when it comes up on the bad list, we'll argue about it.
Really? Okay. I thought we were just going to shoot each other.
Well, it's kind of hard to do that since it's over Skype.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
So I said you could have 3 to 5 tops of your favorite movies and 1 or 2 of your least favorite. So I am not sure, Steve, what kind of list you've got, but
hopefully you pared it down like from 34.
I have 6 and 3, so I hope you're
it's happy. Only like 53 to pick from.
Yeah.
So, but that's the problem is that he would not only have his list, he would have 3 lists for 3 different reasons.
Here's the other parameter that Dr. Jace set down. It's only animated, so no live action, which means John Carter out.
Now I disagree there, because there's more animation in John Carter than there is in Finding Nemo.
Well,
but
we
still
can
live action.
If it's on your list, then we'll talk about it then. Okay. The other thing is no Pixar. So like the Pixar movies, that would be a whole nother podcast on its own. And it would dominate the discussion. We're talking about the traditional, well, not necessarily traditional animation. Cause I've
not
got
anymore.
I've got a fave.
Well, it's I'll start off with the one I think is my favorite, regular animated, not when I mean by that non-computerized, would be The Lion King. That's my number one favorite animated Disney film of all time.
Why is that?
You know, I think it was a combination of a little thing. One, I thought it was well done, good music, and it had James Earl Jones in it. But beyond that, I think it hit me at a time when it kind of related to me. I think I ended up seeing it like 3 times in the theater, that I related with Simba and the raising up and that coming of age story. I think it hit me at the right time in my life. And I think that's a huge part of it. But I also think it has good stories. It was good songs. And I related to it. So it hit me on all 3 levels.
Just like a negative spiritual message, though.
Well, we can talk about that later.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But, I mean, because we actually are going to talk about spiritual messages.
Right. Later,
but all right, Steve, what about you?
I'm going to lump these 3 together because, you know, everyone always
now, wait a minute. Lumps
them together.
Wait, you're going to take one, Steve. One.
You want me to do one?
I want
one.
You to,
all right.
Let's all start right. with one, okay? All
right. That's pretty one. Much what one means.
And not a trilogy.
Not a trilogy.
Although I have a kind of cheat there too, but go ahead.
Okay, since Jace is starting in the modern era, I'll stick with the modern era and go with Beauty and the Beast. I thought it was extremely well done. I liked the story. I liked the way they embellished the original story, and didn't go crazy with, you know, taking everything out of context and read.
And also has a negative spiritual connotation to it.
We'll talk about that later.
It actually doesn't.
It really does.
No, it doesn't. But the you know, the whole thing with I think Belle is one of the strongest heroines, you know, female leads in all of the movies, and it's good to see that someone who isn't going to sit down and just take things happening to her, is going to actually make changes and force changes in the story. So
yeah, she's proactive.
She very much so. And you know, having the Beast as, you know, a transformation from, you know, this terrible thing into what he becomes. You know, I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but
yeah, you don't want to, you know, give it away, yeah. Since it's what, how old, Daniel?
1991.
Yeah.
So you know, I think the only problem that I have with it really is that the timing is off, and this in the story.
What?
There's like this 20-year leap between when he becomes the Beast, and then when Belle comes into his life, something like that. I think it's 20 years, but that's not reflected in the age. And you know, the whole thing.
Yeah, he looks like a girly schoolboy.
No, he looks really young. I never thought about that though.
Yeah,
well, that's the power of magic. He's been, you know, suspended in that form.
But age wise, I mean, he's lived a life of 40 years.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah,
that makes it even more creepier than my original issue with this story.
All right, Daniel, what about you?
I'm just going to go ahead and cheat and do Wreck-It Ralph. I love Wreck-It Ralph. I know it's last year, but I got to get it out on the table before anybody else does it.
That's not a cheat yet. I mean, it's
well, it's a cheat in the sense that it's Disney Animation out-Pixaring Pixar. Because if you take last year and you take Brave, which is Pixar's attempt to be Disney, and kind of put them side by side, I do think Disney did a better job last year being Pixar than the other way around. Especially when you consider that, you know, Wreck-It Ralph's got like 190 separate characters in it, which is like 3 times as many as you see in most computerized animated films. So, and the story, I mean, the story hits on so many beats for me. That opening scene at Badnon.
I'm sorry, hang on just a second. There's some tapping and some sloshing going on.
I'm doing neither.
Okay. Well, if it's Daniel, it's okay because he's our guest. But
well, no, I took off my ear. I turned off my headphones. That might have been me because he started talking. Giveaway. I haven't seen it yet. So I took.
Oh, I won't ruin earbuds it.
Okay. What were you saying, Daniel?
That opening scene with Badnon, it just in 2-3 minutes time, you've got the whole problem. You've got Ralph's history.
Yeah.
And by the time he's done, you completely feel for him and understand the problem he's got when he goes back to the Nicelanders. And well, you feel from him that moment on.
And yeah. So many cool cameos from, like, you know, I mean, I played Space Invaders in the arcades, you know, so looking back through the years and seeing Q-Bert and seeing, you know, all the different iterations of evil characters, you know, sitting there in Badenon.
Here's the thing with Q-Bert is driving my son home that day. I had to explain to him what Q-Bert was, and I had a really hard time. I'm like, well, it's kind of a pyramid. And you're kind of jumping from side to side, and you want to make all the squares turn colors, and snakes are following you, and balls are bouncing. And I just, I had to give up. Q-Bert, the unexplainable.
Q-Bert.
Thing I loved about Wreck-It Ralph is just the way it all unfolds. I really liked the revelations, and I wasn't too far ahead of the movie as far as figuring out what was going on and what was going to happen next, and who was what and what was where. And all that, so I like. Yeah, that's one of my favorite movies of the year, I think.
Well, it was really, really fun.
I saw it 3 times last year.
Wow!
And I mean, I do not go see movies again in the theater. And at one point, my son said he wanted to go see Wreck-It Ralph, and it's like, hey, I'm not going to argue.
Pretty cool.
It's a fantastic movie.
So, all right, Ben, well.
What's yours?
I'm going modern, too. I've got Meet the Robinsons. I love that movie.
Really?
I do. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I really enjoy that movie. I'm hearing response that I might be in the minority here. Is that?
I don't know. I'd have to watch it again. I didn't mind it the first time, but I didn't love it. So I'd have to watch it again. I wouldn't mind watching it again, though. So maybe
I'll just think about it. It's got time travel. It's got paradox. It's got things that happen, you know, early in the movie that are paid off later on. And the revelation, I didn't know anything about what this movie was when I rented it, but I rented it, watched it on my own and thought, oh, that's great. That's a great movie. I'm going to buy that. And I did. And I've been watching it a couple more times now. And every time you kind of pick up a new little thing, I mean, it's structured in a little ways like Back to the Future. Where, you know, in Back to the Future, they mention how the uncle is in prison again, and then he goes back in time and finds his uncle in the crib. Oh, we just love him. We just never take him out. You know, everything pays off in the movie, and I like that.
So. And it's basically their version of Space Mountain, right? That's
no,
part
there,
of the...
There is a fantastic shot in it where they show you Tomorrowland, but instead of the sign saying Tomorrowland, it says Dayland.
That's right.
And I'm with Ben. I love this movie, and I do think that we're in the minority. This may be my favorite Disney animated film of all time.
Wow.
And it's one of those things that I think it almost got the first John Carter treatment, because I can remember my wife saying, "Let's go see this movie," and I was like, "What's it even about?"
Well, that's just it.
And I went to it. I loved it. It's got the DNA of Walt Disney all over it. Even though it was, you know, almost 40 years after his death, it's a wonderful movie. But again, comparison wise, I've got the Art of Cars book next to me, and it's probably about 250 pages. The Art of Meet the Robinsons book, which is next to it, is like 80. So I think you could tell what Disney has been putting their support by when they'll only give about 80 pages worth of artwork, and the book is so thin. All it really is pictures. I feel bad for the author, because it's like, did anybody actually talk to her about the making of the movie?
Wow. Well, Meet the Robinsons, you could tell they broke it down. They really plotted it well, and it was a good plot, but it's not a franchise movie.
No.
You know, there is no sequel. Or no easy sequel to do.
Right.
So,
well, and I do think that this was it's a film that Disney had a lot of concerns with, because it's really one of the first films that John Lasseter got on his desk when he moved over to Disney as creative officer. And I know he pulled a lot of stuff out of it and changed a lot of things story-wise, because obviously at that point, Pixar was so ahead of Disney Animation on story. I mean, he got there and found so many projects that just had story problems that he immediately had to fix.
So are we able to, can we go to one we don't like, or are we still on the ones we like?
No, let's stick with the ones we like. Let's go round two with the ones we like.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with Tangled.
Oh, yeah, good I didn't one. Even think about that one.
It's a good one, no, yeah.
I think Tangled is the best princess film of all of them. I thought the writing was smart. I thought it was entertaining. And I was actually surprised. My wife and I watched it on Netflix, and I was not expecting it. It was just, you know, we'd watched a lot of sci-fi, and I go, well, my wife has been a great sport, so let's watch a nice Disney animated film because she likes that kind of thing. And I thought I was, you know, being a real loving, caring husband. And I'm sitting there at the end of it going, that is an awesome movie. I really enjoyed it. I laughed out loud multiple times.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good one.
Ben, yeah. Do you have any?
I'm going to interject stuff on this one. See, Tangled shows Disney boy problem. They're having all these issues with what can we go out and get boys to watch. So originally Tangled wasn't named Tangled. It was called Rapunzel.
Rapunzel, yeah.
And they figured that boys wouldn't come and see this strong male character, Flynn Rider, because they'd look at the poster and they'd see that name and they'd be like, ah, we're not going to go see that mom and dad. So they changed the name to Tangled, thinking the kids wouldn't figure out that it was about a princess.
Right.
Yeah.
But guess what?
So
it's about a princess.
Yeah, okay. and you'll see that in the future, because the Ice Queen is now Frozen. So, again, these one-word titles to, you know, get boys to go see them.
Yeah. Right. Well, I loved the horse. I thought it was a great convention that they used in the story. I thought it was very entertaining. I when I saw it, I put it – I'd have to revisit this, but at the time when I saw it, I might have even put it in my top five animated films all time, but I'd have to really consider it. But when I watched it, that was the type of reaction I had.
Well, I have three daughters and then two sons, but one son is a baby. All four of the kids who could actually watch this movie really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's testament right there too.
Yeah.
And I can tell you the last 2 years at Disneyland, she has a meet and greet that's just her own. It's not with the other princesses. 2 years ago, I refused to go to the meet and greet because it was over an hour long to just meet her and Flynn Rider. And this year, when we actually did meet her, we saw people get turned away because the line was longer than the princess and Flynn was going to be there. So I'm definitely still hugely popular with kids.
Yeah. I think it's the hair.
Okay, so Steve.
Yeah.
Round two for you. Yeah. What were your three that you put all together in one?
Snow White, Cinderella, and Sleeping Beauty.
Oh, that's cheating.
Fair
cheating.
But it's they sort of make up like this awesome trilogy.
Not even close.
In my thinking.
They're a trilogy?
They're a trilogy.
What?
Yeah.
Only if you're watching Once Upon a Time.
What was that?
Only if you're watching Once Upon a Time.
Exactly. Exactly.
But no, that just the characters, they're very different, but it's sort of like it's looking at things like slightly differently each time. You know, you have Snow White, who's just the innocent, you know, the things happening to her and just naive about a whole bunch of things. And you could look at it in one way and see the ending of it when she goes off with the prince to this castle in the clouds, almost like a, you know, almost like a messianic salvation type of a thing. With Cinderella, she's the good one. You know, she's the one that knows what she is supposed to do, what she has to do, and does it even to a fault. Even if she, you know, she works all day and she can't make the dress, but she knows that she has to, she doesn't not work and make the dress, you know, it gets made for her. It's like a grace, like a mercy that's being given to her. And then of course, you know, the whole bibbidi bobbidi boo thing. But, and then you have Sleeping Beauty, who's more, you know, things are kept from her. So with her, it's more like this thing where she makes these mistakes because she doesn't have the information she needs. and you know she makes these horrible mistakes. But then you have this Prince Philip come in at the end. He has this shield with a huge cross on it, by the way. And I'm like, this is and he's fighting a dragon. It just seemed so you know, like a tip of the hat to Christianity or something. Every time I watch it, it's just
or the Crusades.
But having a dragon there is that sort of sets it off. I mean, you don't typify Islam as a dragon, so you know just. But that just sort of sets it off to me. They just have this sense of, you know, there's maybe they're not Christian movies, but they're made at a time when Christianity is much more overt, and you have more things tipping hats to Christianity, tipping hats to faith, and seeing that in these movies. I have something else on my list that does a little bit of that too. But these three just sort of, you know, lump it all together, and you could watch all of them and
well, there
there's
you
a sense
it.
Of what is it?
I said, there you have it. You have all of Steve's contributions to this section.
Gets one more. You're allowed to have five.
Right there.
To have five, so he gets one more.
Yeah, I get one more. Ha
ha. Daniel, how about you? Second round.
Somebody took Meet the Robinsons.
Cross that off a list.
Yeah, but that gives you the opportunity to stick another one in.
Yeah, but I hadn't thought that far ahead. So Peter Pan. I love Peter Pan, the story of the boy who never grew up. Because as you get to know me, for heaven's sakes, I'm a grown man interested in Disney things. I mean, so and my whole philosophy.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but I'm glad that you did.
Yeah, I've caught on to the fact that it's a little odd a few times. But my whole philosophy on like things like work is if you're not having fun with it, you're just not doing it right. And I work in one of the every time I tell people what I do for a job, they're like, "Well, that must be really boring." And if you look at it in a certain light, yeah, it is pretty boring, but if you think about it and have some fun with it, it can be pretty exciting. So it's always been a big thing for me. If you're going to do something, let's have fun. So,
yeah.
And again, it's the boy, it's adventure, it's imagination. It's one of the best rides out there, classic dark rides. So Peter Pan, fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great ride.
Film. Yeah, that's a good one, yeah. Ben?
Yeah, I'm trying to decide if I'm going to go with my cheating one then. I'm going to go ahead and just cheat. Rescuers Down Under, and the third movie in the Rescuers trilogy, The Great Mouse Detective.
You can't lump three
you
in together.
You can't lump those. I was going to take The Mouse Detective.
Well, you can now talk about it, but those three do go together. I mean, I picture them all in the same universe. And
you guys
I just
are a bunch of cheaters.
Well, Rescuers Down Under came out. Oh.
Ben, I'm disappointed. I expect it from Steve. I expect more from you.
Well, you know, it just fits. Great Mouse Detective hit me in junior high when I was really into Sherlock Holmes, and I was reading all of the Sherlock Holmes, and then I realized, oh, there's this movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I know I didn't see it. I'm pretty sure I didn't see it in theaters. But and then Rescuers and Rescuers Down Under, they go together.
Those three you just mentioned are three of my favorite. They'd definitely be in my top 10, and I think one of or two of those could be in my top 5.
But I love like all the behind the scenes stuff with Great Mouse Detective and Rescuers Down Under, but like that's where they're developing some new computer techniques, and using two dimensional. Cartoon characters on a three-dimensional model when they're in the Big Ben and they're running around all the gears and stuff like that. And Vincent Price. I mean, it's a great movie, but they all go together. It's one long movie. It's a trilogy.
Yeah, whatever.
Great Mouse Detective is the prequel that explains where the rescuers all got their start. That's my story, and that's what I'm going with.
Yeah, whatever. All right. So my
should you watch The Great Mouse Detective first?
No, it doesn't matter. It's a good prequel like that. You know, you don't have to see. Yeah.
All right. So then I'm going to go with...
Round three, Dr. Jace.
I'm going to actually play by the rules. And I'm going to go with Robin Hood.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
It's my favorite... No, let me say. It's my second favorite incarnation of Robin Hood. But it's one of my favorite Disney films. I remember as a kid... even now I don't like to watch movies over and over and over again. I'd rather watch a whole series or what have you. There's only a few things, a few stories that I can watch over and over and over again, like Lord of the Rings, Star Trek, Star Wars. But I watched Robin Hood repeatedly. In fact, growing up, I think Robin Hood and the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie and Mary Poppins, but we won't talk about that. Were the only movies that I could actually watch over and over and over again.
The Mary Poppins thing really makes it clear about the life path that you've chosen, I think.
Yeah, well, there's
animation. I'm just going to... When it comes to Mary Poppins, so I have a friend who has multiple sons, and he refuses to let a copy of Mary Poppins be in his house. So I would just like to urge every man who refuses to watch Mary Poppins to just rename the movie in their head Bert. Just rename it Bert.
Exactly. Yes, but no, I Peter Pan, it's so fun. I kind of relate it to, The Muppets Christmas Carol. It takes one of the best
stories. You mean Robin Hood?
Yeah, I said it's kind of like The Muppets Christmas Carol, where you take a traditional story and you put in these fun animated kind of characters. And that's why I like Peter Pan, is that you take this traditional story and you put in all these fun little animated characters. And I think it's, again, my second favorite incarnation of Robin Hood.
Yeah, I was talking to my buddy about this yesterday. And if you take that script, you could film it with just humans and it would work. Yeah. They don't have to be animals. It just really adds another level of charm to it.
And for those who are curious, the best version of Robin Hood is not Russell Crowe.
It is Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner, Prince of Thieves. Dun, 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 dun.
So wrong. It's Errol Flynn.
No. Errol Flynn. I don't know people's issues with that one. That was awesome with Morgan Freeman. Yeah, that's a great Robin Hood.
I didn't say it was bad. I'm just saying Errol Flynn's the best.
Whatever.
And I can honestly say I've never, ever seen an Errol Flynn movie.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. I feel bad about it because I should, but
you really should.
I haven't.
It's ridiculous.
It should be Robin Hood.
All right, Steve, round three for you.
Well, no, yeah, he's down to round five.
Round five. Well, this one I broke up into four sections and each one has three subdivisions.
What do you got for us, man?
Because it starts out as a Christmas movie, and it's never billed as that. And it has this wonderful little Christmas carol at the beginning where, you know, the snow is falling and everything is white. And you see that, you know, the lady is a Christmas present to the wife. And it's just this wonderful intro. And then you get this, you know, interesting story with the dogs back and forth and you know, how the different things play out in the dogs' worlds, you know, my 4-year-old loves it. He just can't get enough of it. So he's always watching it. So I've seen it enough times that I can sort of, you know, pick it apart and do stuff. There was one part where Tramp mentions that the apes in the zoo are too much like humans, and I think that's a little bit too silly for, you know, a nod to evolution or something like that. But other than that, you know, it's just a good, fun movie, and the way it ends up with them together and having little puppies and stuff like that, it's a sweet, nice movie, and I love the way it begins.
Well,
once it begins, it's got me hooked.
That whole Christmas scene actually happened because Walt Disney had done that with his wife.
Ah, that's cool.
That's sweet.
La 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 la.
So
on to that, Daniel.
Daniel, round three.
So yeah, I'm a grown man. Little Mermaid. Thanks for letting us
know. And why?
You know, for when you look at Disney animation, it was in such a decline in the 80s. And it really is the Little Mermaid that brings it back.
Yeah.
And the thing that truly did it for them was having Howard Ashman there and pushing for story. And by him being able to bring story back as a key to a Disney movie.
But the story was horrible.
Oh, without Ashman, it would have been worse. And the thing about Ashman...
not saying anything about
it. You have to realize that what he's shooting for is he's shooting for musical theater. So if you take it and you say, okay, it's going to follow the principles of musical theater, that's what The Little Mermaid does. Everything is bound together by a story. And kids still love it today.
And it works.
But it's a horrible story.
I saw Little Mermaid on Broadway. It does work for theater. I don't know what you're talking about. It's a horrible, horrible story. You're compared to Beauty and the Beast?
Okay, this is the story. A girl wants to... you know, wants to not be a mermaid, or, you know, wants the things that aren't mermaid things. Her father forbids her. She goes and makes a deal with
a
witch.
There's a boy who's a farmer, and he wants to get out of his moisture farm, and his uncle forbids it. Okay, go on.
You don't talk to me about Star Wars, man.
Wait, go, Steve, keep going.
And she makes a deal with a witch, and to do that, she loses her prized possession, her voice, and her father gives up pretty much everything to try to win everything back. The witch gets killed. I mean, it's a gruesome kill scene. And then the father, after the entire thing is all played out, he relents and lets his daughter become human after the whole thing. So it's sort of like, you know, be a petulant little brat, make a deal with the devil, and in the end you'll get what you want. It's just horrible.
I'm just saying, it is a cartoon, so maybe we're thinking too hard.
Yeah. No, I've got some problems with it too, but they'll come in the spiritual part where we tear things apart or build them up. Far more than was intended.
I just think there's definitely issues with it, but compared to Beauty and the Beast, I mean, there's some, I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, I think Beauty and the Beast is a far better film than Little Mermaid.
And let's talk about staying power. This movie was 1989, and Disney opened a dark ride for this movie in 2012 in Orlando.
But bad things can be influential too. I mean, you know, there's a lot of Slayer albums that are gotten into the millions of copies, you know, so you can't say that it's good because it has lasted so long or because
Daniel, at this point, if whenever Steve starts going like this, I just bring up The Dark Knight.
Don't even go everything. There, man.
Hey, Daniel, I do want to ask you to clarify something. You said that in the 80s, the animation was in decline. What did you mean?
So I think the best example is Black Cauldron. Roy E. Disney is hawking this movie. He's at Good Morning America, and they ask him what it's about, and he's in charge of animation, and he's like, you know what? I can't even tell you what the story is. So their standards had gone down. They had lost focusing on story. So, and I mean, some of those movies... Yeah, I mean, for example, The Great Mouse Detective that you bring up, you know, is coming, you know, The Rescuers, you know, they're coming from a time period in which Disney really isn't making money on animated films. And with Michael Eisner, they're considering closing the animation studio completely. And they might have if it wasn't for The Little Mermaid.
Yeah, The Little Mermaid brought back Disney animated completely. So we talk about The Lion King and we talk about The Beauty and the Beast, those wouldn't have happened without The Little Mermaid.
Right.
Of course, neither would Hercules, so maybe we should rethink that.
All right, so where were we? Round three.
You, Ben.
For me.
You're on round five because you did three of your
picks. I'm on round three because I make the rules. I edit the podcast. I can go back and put things in if I want.
I created the ground rules for this one.
No. I did the outline. You came up with the no Pixar, no live action, and I made the outline.
Basically what you're saying is that no matter what we put down, we can just pretty much ignore whatever. All right. Okay.
Well, no, but I edit, so.
He's just going to edit out our stuff anyway and just go with his.
I'm going to say Sleeping Beauty because, first of all, the design of that movie is fantastic.
Yeah.
It is a beautiful, beautiful design. Just the cell backgrounds or whatever, and then the character designs are just amazing. And then you have that battle at the end with the dragon, and that's exciting. And I'm guessing that it was probably very new. You've not seen anything like that when it came out, but I'm just guessing that. But that's the hero going into battle against the dragon. There's some problems with the movie because, you know, the heroine is pretty passive because she's asleep. but the hero,
she's
man,
the strongest.
Prince Philip, he gets some awesome stuff to do. Yeah. And I really just, as far as a girl movie goes, this is the most boy movie of all the girl movies.
So. Well, and you talk about the background and the design. A lot of that is inspired by Mary Blair, who, along with working with Disney, was also a fine artist. So she was known for her own rights for non-Disney stuff. But most of the times today, people tend to think of Small World because she's the one who set the style and tone for that entire attraction.
Really?
Really.
I look at Sleeping Beauty, and it's just that it's just got such a graphic design type of feel with the sharp angles and the color scheme and everything. But it's natural too. It's just it's one of those. It's just a very special movie the way it all falls into place.
So. Well, and the thing you got to remember about animation is really it was a boys' club. You know, ladies were allowed to do some of the, you know, the fill-ins and that sort of thing. But it really your chief key animators were all men. And Mary Blair was someone who kind of fought against that system mostly because Walt Disney loved her art.
That's
all right. All right.
Round four, Dr. Jace.
I'm actually going to go another little bit off kilter here is The Emperor's New Groove.
Really?
Yeah, mainly because I avoided watching it for a long time and I had very, very low expectations on it. So when I watched it, I just thought it was really funny. And I'll be honest, you guys have mentioned several of the ones I would have picked. So I'm kind of picking leftovers here a little bit because I would have gone probably with The Rescuers and maybe The Great Mouse Detective as well. But of the ones that have not been mentioned, I really enjoyed The Emperor's New Groove. I mean, I don't think it's to the same level as, say, Tangled or Lion King, but it's in that second tier for me.
That's a fun movie.
The Llama. It's funny.
Well, and isn't it David Spade?
Mm-hmm.
I used to really like him.
Used to?
Yeah. The shtick got old, but...
Yeah, he kind of went kind of the creepy route after a while and hasn't gotten out of that.
All right, Steve, do you have more? Or should I even...
Well, I was going to say The Aristocats, mainly because of Phil Harris, who also did Baloo. I think he did something else, too. I'm not sure. But I'm a big fan of Phil Harris, going back to the Jack Benny show and stuff like that. So
he's on Jack Benny show?
He was the music director for, in the late 30s and through the 40s, I believe. He went off to war, I believe, for 1 year.
Is he the music director that actually spoke?
Yeah, he was like, yeah, man, you know, he's like the cool guy, you know, the always like calling him Jackson.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, he's fantastic on the Jack Benny show, playing that character, and then, just a wonderful voice. You know, he did a Onesie Twosie, I Love Yousy, and The Thing. You know, but just, you know, fantastic stuff. And then just hearing him singing in the movies and stuff like that, especially in his genre in Aristocats. You know, really pulls it out there. So that's the only other one I had on my list.
Daniel, do you have a round four for us?
Yeah, you guys have mentioned all my real favorites.
I think right now we're pulling a lot of the scabs, I think.
I'm not.
See, my problem is at this point, I'd have to pull out something like Lilo and Stitch, and everybody groans. But my kids will not quit watching that movie. They just will not stop.
My kids are desperate to see it because the place we can rent it from, the only place that has it in our area, the disc is so scratched it won't even play on our player. Nice. And so we've seen like the Disney, you know, symbol at the beginning and it goes away and then it won't play.
That's so funny.
It's just sad, but hey, maybe Netflix will have it soon.
Yeah. Hey, it's also a sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
Like
Netflix made the deal with Disney, so they're getting tons of Disney stuff now.
See, and even though that contract hasn't started, they already have some of that back catalog there.
Yeah.
I'm excited for some of those 70s movies that were live action to come out. Like
Peach Dragon?
Oh, no, the Last Noah's Ark or whatever. Some of those kind of movies.
The what? Hey,
I'm going to admit something now, guys.
What?
Do you know, it wasn't until I got married that I watched half of the Disney animated films, especially the princesses. My wife, when I got married, I'd never seen Snow White, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty. In fact, I still don't think I've ever seen Sleeping Beauty.
Wow.
Because they're all girl movies. I grew up, you know, I grew up with all boys. You don't go see the girl princess films. So my wife has been the one that's been educating me on the wonderful world of Disney because I just, you know, I saw Dumbo, I saw Pinocchio, you know, all the movies that boys would see,
mm-hmm.
not girls.
Well.
But I felt we were talking about it, so I needed to actually confess that.
I've got two more, and one I'm just going to say quickly, and that's Sword in the Stone. And that's for the similar reasons to Sleeping Beauty. I love the design there, but also the story. It's King Arthur, and that's kind of fun. But the one I wanted to end on that's probably my all-time favorite is Pinocchio. I love that movie as a movie.
I'm surprised nobody had said it. In fact, I'm actually surprised of all four of us, very few of the classic films got named as the favorites.
Yeah, it's true.
Except I mentioned three.
Except for Steve did all three at one time. Yeah. So, all right, let's move over to least favorites then.
Easy. There's no contest.
Okay.
There's a tie for two of them because you said one to two.
Yeah.
And they are tied for the worst Disney films of all time. All
right.
One of them is Fantasia.
Say the other one and then we can fight about Fantasia.
I don't need to fight about Fantasia. It's boring. The other boring one is Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, I would kind of agree with you on Alice in Wonderland, just because it didn't have a story.
Well, exactly. I remember vivid moments of it, but my wife and I watched it again maybe a year ago, and I'm thinking, this is really a dud of a film. It's not about anything.
Well, the problem was that they jammed two stories into one movie and didn't make it flow. You know, it was things that happened in those two books. It wasn't everything. And it just got to the end where she, you know, recovers. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, it was a dream and you're done. And you're like, wait a minute, what just happened? So, yeah, I mean,
I think even if I'm not mistaken, I think even Walt Disney said that was one he regretted.
He was not a fan of it. Yeah. And by that time, to be honest, Walt had kind of moved away from caring about the animation unit. He was more interested in live action and, hey, what's this television thing?
Mm-hmm.
Because by this time, he's beginning to build towards, you know, maybe having his own little playland.
Yeah. Well, are you...
Did that ever happen for him?
Okay, so...
So
Ben, Fantasia.
Yeah. There's nothing else to say, but it's boring.
See, Walt actually cared about that one because that was him bringing culture to the masses.
Well, that's lovely. If I love going to the orchestra, I love seeing the I love going to the symphony. I love going to museums. I love artwork. If I want to go see a movie, I want dialogue and story. If I want music, I'll turn on the radio.
So you don't want any visuals with your music? Because that's what it is. It's a music video.
Yeah.
Classical music. And I like it. I mean, I like it because it is for the same reasons maybe that I like Star Trek the Motion Picture, I guess. But
yeah.
You can kind of sit back and just kind of relax and enjoy the music and watch the pretty pictures.
Yeah, in Star Trek, it's all sit back and watch this 5-hour-long shot intro of this stage.
Yeah, enjoy the music and watch the pretty pictures.
Yeah. So. No, I mean, it's one thing if it's in the background while I'm doing something. Like if my wife and I are ice skating and it's in the background, that's kind of cool. But if I'm going to a movie theater or if I'm sitting down in my living room watching it, my goodness, I'll go do my taxes or something more entertaining.
Well, I do believe that Fantasia is one that if you are interested in animation, you'll enjoy it because it's high quality animation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fantasia 2000 I've never seen, but.
Well, and Fantasia 2000 is Roy E. Disney's tribute to his uncle because he's the one who pushed that through.
Does it work? Is it as
boring? I have the Fantasia 2000 set. And after 2 hours and 45 minutes of Fantasia, I have not yet braved putting in Fantasia 2000.
Wow. All right. Steve.
Let's see.
One or two least favorite.
Well, I already went off on Little Mermaid.
Okay, so we can move on. Daniel.
I do have another one, but okay. I can wait.
Well, let's hear it.
No, I can wait.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead, Daniel.
Don't be passive-aggressive on the podcast,
I'm not being
Steve.
Passive-aggressive.
Steve, are you going to pout?
You're being passive-aggressive.
Hey, Steve, you better be good. Ben might edit you out.
Might?
Hey, not with the guest present, guys. You're embarrassing me.
Jeez. This would never happen on my show.
You're so bad. All right, if you want another one from me, it's Pocahontas.
Oh, you should have let me go.
You should have taken the chance.
Take it.
Take it away, Daniel.
I can pretty much watch any Disney movie. I just cannot watch Pocahontas. It is just so boring to me.
It's spiritually, it's horrible. Absolutely, positively.
So what you're saying is it's Fantasia-like.
That's what Daniel's saying, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think spiritually, it's actually a damaging spiritual movie. So if we want to move into the spiritual stuff, we can talk about it there. But otherwise, you know.
And so I'm not allowed to watch certain historical movies with my wife.
This one is not historical.
Well, and that's part of it is this one is very far from historical because it gives you this idea of the happy ending at the very end. Uh-huh. And of course, that is not who she's going to wind up with.
No.
But it has that really cool song. Blue Corn Moon. How's it go?
I can honestly say I have not seen this movie.
That's a good thing.
And I have no interest in seeing it after hearing people talk about it. Oh. But part of what bothers me about that is it's a historical event. You know, it's one thing to take a fairy tale and switch things around and add things to it, but to take an historical person and, you know, have her talk to a tree or a raccoon or whatever, yeah. that bothers me. I don't like that too as much.
That Little Mermaid's not real?
I didn't say that. I wasn't talking about Little Mermaid when I said that.
See, didn't TLC have something about real mermaids or history or something?
I think it was a joke.
Let's hope so.
So, Ben, what's your least favorite?
Well, I have two. And I have one that I have a feeling that no one is going to argue about at all. And I have one that people...
Fantasia?
No. Home on the Range.
Oh.
I worked for a place where... It was residential treatment for court-ordered young children who had done something and were put in the court system and they needed treatment, but they weren't going to go to prison, to juvie. And so they were in this residential place and I worked there. And one of my things that I did was I took people on outings on the weekend, and I had to take a group of three kids to see Home on the Range, and I hated that movie so bad. I went in thinking, oh, this could be cool. I like Westerns. And I came out saying, Roseanne. And, you know, one thing my mom used to say, because she worked on a dairy farm, and we used to watch, whenever there was a cow on any Disney cartoon, the udders are going to be flopping around, you know, in your face. And I just felt like that's what this whole movie was. It was just flopping udders, man.
It was utterly ridiculous.
Oh, see that one.
That was not good.
Wait, you've heard that before? Was it cheesy?
You're just milking the humor out of this thing.
I know. Jeez, hey, what's your beef? Is it cheesy? I'm sorry.
That was smooth like butter.
All right.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Oh, and then my last one is Aladdin. I can't stand that movie anymore. Can't stand it.
I haven't gotten to a point where I can't stand it yet. But I can definitely see that as an option.
So I remember when it came out, Aladdin, I took my girlfriend to go see it two nights in a row. And I can remember how excited we were to go see this movie. And part of the reason we saw it was because it was at a dollar theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome.
And I can remember thinking that some of the sequences, especially flying, were just fantastic animation. And I listened to the music all the time. And that girlfriend is now my wife, and she cannot stand this movie.
Well, part of it was that we used that as a date movie. It was freshman year in college. And, you know, Christmas break, freshman year of college. Because it was romantic, you know, and all that thing. But, you know, Robin Williams, I like him, but he just, I don't like him that much anymore.
I actually thought he is one of the more memorable Disney characters. I am shocked that we went through this and Hunchback of Notre Dame never came up and Hercules never came up.
I have to say, I actually kind of liked Hercules. And I think I kind of liked Hunchback of Notre Dame, too, but just because of the gothic sensibility more than anything else.
Right.
I thought you liked talking gargoyle statues.
I do. I do like talking gargoyle statues.
I don't think I've seen either of them, so I couldn't put them on the list.
Hercules, wasn't Danny DeVito in that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right, well, let's talk a little bit about some of the spiritual themes that you can find in these movies. And I know some of this is going to be just digging, and some of it's going to be stretching, but I think we can have some fun with that. So,
as far as you know, we're talking about things that we disagree on. I think we've had this debate before, but I think that Beauty and the Beast, maybe not biblical, but I think it's a horribly immoral message, in that you're teaching young girls to live with abusive men who, you know, hold them captive and then fall in love with them. That's why you have a lot of these young ladies who end up staying with the bad boy, the guy they shouldn't be with, because, oh, true love, it will totally change them. And you end up having these girls stay in really horrible relationships. So if a guy kidnaps you, abuses you, disrespects your father, stick with them.
No, you're missing the point. There's a transformation. There's a transformation from true villain to redeemed hero.
Yeah, it's called Stockholm Syndrome.
In the Beast. It is not called Stockholm Syndrome.
That's exactly what it's called.
This woman accepts this bad position because her father has been taken captive by a true villain. She is the catalyst that makes that true villain into a true hero. You don't have that. I mean, Anakin Skywalker doesn't become a hero. You know, he makes a decision at the end which changes everything and makes the outcome good.
So you're telling me that your daughter gets kidnapped, or you get kidnapped, she trades herself for you, he treats her like crap. You're telling me that you'd give your consent at the end of it even though he has a change of heart?
Because the transformation, it's visual in the movie because he transforms from a beast into a human being because that love has been, you know, been accomplished there. Because that he has become a hero in himself before he becomes a human being. He's still the Beast, but he's the hero.
The message we're telling the girls
absolutely not
the bad guy. Yeah.
No, in a situation where you can't do anything to get out of it, make the change that will change that other person.
Right, but she can't get out of it. Girls are watching it.
Yes, girls are watching it. He's a true villain at the beginning of the movie. You don't know what's going to happen. Okay, he's the villain. You don't know about what's his name, the other guy. Okay, that's not a big deal at that point. You don't know.
Now we know that even when he becomes the hero, he's still a creepy hero because, as you pointed out, he's 40 or 50 or 60 years older than she is. So thank you for proving my point earlier.
Also, but you don't know how old she is. Maybe she's 30 and he's 40. That's not creepy.
I have to say, I disagree with both of you.
That's all right. That makes it more fun.
No, I agree with Steve about the transformation thing. That's what the movie is. The Beast part of the movie is about redemption and becoming who you're meant to be. You know,
on a complete story, yes. If we're talking about literature, if we're just breaking down the story, I totally agree with you. Yeah. What I'm talking about is Disney makes these films for children. And I'm telling you, I have a counseling background. And if you look at some of the stories that are in the princess films, it creates these narratives in young girls' minds that they play out. And that they, I think on a story, of course, it's a story about redemption. I'm telling you, the cultural impact, I do believe that there's negative effects that these stories have on young girls.
And here's the negative effect that I get from that. The movie is about how it's what's on the inside that counts. And that's what she falls in love with. She doesn't fall in love with him until she starts to see that he does have humanity and that there is a chance for him to be human. But then they don't fall in love until he's beautiful again. And so then the message becomes, it's what's outside that counts. And if you look, every Disney princess is so beautiful, and Beast can't have her until he's not a beast anymore. And poor Quasimodo, you know, he spends the whole movie in love with that beautiful woman only to see her fall in love with the beautiful man.
Exactly. Yeah.
See, like I said, I didn't see that one. But when it comes to Beauty and the Beast,
creepy 40-year-old.
Excuse me?
Creepy 40-year-old.
Marrying a 30-year-old. That's not much of a big deal. How old is Belle? You don't know.
That's just a historical reflection of the times.
Yeah,
Come on.
The 13-year-old marries the 40-year-old man. The father arranged it when she was born.
That doesn't mean that it's okay. It just means that whenever there's a male-dominated society, they can marry whoever they want.
So does that make the Christmas story creepy because Joseph was probably 25 and Mary was 13? No. You look at it as a sign of the times. I mean, that's what happened back then.
I will also say this, though. I got to see Glenn Keane. I think is it Glenn Keane?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to see him speaking at a children's ministry convention, and he was talking about all this stuff that we're talking about with Beauty and the Beast, and he was drawing Beast on an overhead projector kind of thing that went up on all the the digital screens and everything. It was really cool. But he's talking about how when he was doing and working on the Beast and trying to make him, what he had to do to make the Beast look both mean and fearsome and also kindly, and so use cow eyes to make him more kindly and and that kind of thing. But when he was working on this transformation of Beast going back to humanity, in his mind, he's looking at that as the, kind of the redemption transformation of us when we come to Christ. And that was kind of in the back of his mind for the whole sequence.
Well, no, that's obviously the part. My wife played Belle in Sleeping with Beauty and the Beast, and one of the funny stories that she had is been right in the middle one of the nights of the transformation. Because what happens is they have kind of a switch of the eye where the Beast gets pulled up by a rope, and then another guy drops down. Well, they do all this with lights and stuff. Well, ended up messing up, and the Beast part ends up getting hung, like, because the guy sneaks off the backstage because something happens. Everyone looks up above. What just so happens that the doll up above, the beast doll up above, and so it looks like they just hung the beast and he's hanging from the rafters. And so the little girls are like, ah!
Kill the beast!
They killed the beast!
All right.
That's cool.
Any other things that you wanted to share? Daniel, you have anything you want to share?
I think it's, you have to be careful with Disney movies, because Disney, as much as possible, is trying to avoid giving spiritual messages. They're going to look for a moral message, but a spiritual message is something they're going to avoid it at pretty much all costs. I think
and
a good
why
example,
is there so much in there?
Well, the thing is if you, so like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, what position does the villain have? See,
I didn't see it.
He's the one. He's like the one priest character that you see in these movies.
He's not a priest. He's a judge.
Is he?
Yeah. In the original, he's a priest, but Disney makes him a judge.
Oh, okay.
Because they really are. My favorite example is at Animal Kingdom. There is a temple area for the India portion of the Animal Kingdom park, and there's all these prayer flags that are around. Well, the prayer flags mean nothing. They're intentionally meant to be gibberish because they don't want to offend anybody by having actual prayer flags there. So you will find all sorts of messages that if you dig, you can use. But somebody like Glenn Keane, when he's working on it, may have in mind a spiritual thought. But Disney itself as a corporation is trying to limit that as much as possible, because they, to be honest, they don't want to offend anybody.
Well, they don't want to lose dollars from the, you know, millions of Christians. They don't want to lose dollars from the millions of people.
But what about Pocahontas? What about Mulan? You know, when you have this the spiritual world that's obviously non-Christian. You know, I mean, they do a lot of overt spiritual stuff.
Agreed. And I think of Mulan because my youth group once, we were going around in a prayer circle and my daughter interrupted and prayed that she'd be converted.
That's awesome.
But I mean, I think in many ways they'd look at the Mulan as almost being like some of the sorcery and magic that you see in some of the others that would be more classical European tales. They're trying to make it safe and sanitized, but they're not trying to preach to anyone other than be a good person, don't lie. What's on the inside counts more than the outside. Just because you're supposed to be a villain doesn't mean you are. So it's very rarely, and it goes all the way back to Walt, because Walt realized that if he was to be overtly religious in films, that it would, in fact, push someone away.
All right. Well, on that note, we need to move on to feedback so we can close this thing down.
All
because
right, Twitter
we're going to, this is going to be a Sci-Fi Christian Aquaman length thing.
Killing frequencies open.
But we don't have Shazbot because technical problems.
Oh.
So. My friend Bill, he says that his favorites were The Rescuers. It was the first anime movie he remembered seeing in theaters, and he loved the line about the mosquito being, I don't even know what that word is. Okay, so we'll move on. Sleeping Beauty, he says he had a long bout with ear infections as a child, and the movie was the one on the hospital while he was there. It was comforting, and he loved the knight defeating the dragon scene. Aladdin. This was the first date movie I had with the woman who became my wife. It holds fond memories, and we still sing the songs together sometimes.
Wow.
So, a little happier ending for them.
So you guys took girls to see, like, Disney movies? I took girls to see, like, horror movies and Dune and stuff like that.
If I remember correctly, on your honeymoon, you went to see Star Wars.
Episode 1, so there's really...
Yeah, Episode 1. So that's more of a horror movie than anything there.
The Princess and the Frog. While this movie is fairly new, and I've only seen it a couple times, I love the twist in the story. This one is a favorite only because of the story and not the other parts of the film. So... moving over to Facebook, Ryan Rick said the Black Cauldron because it has a magic sword, a fair princess, and a dark lord. What else do you need to make a good story?
a good story.
Yeah.
And see, my problem with the Black Cauldron is, for me, those Lloyd Alexander books, the Book of Three, that really kind of set for me as a kid what fantasy was. And I can remember being so excited about the Black Cauldron, and I don't remember my reaction, but I never sought to go see it again until I was an adult.
Wow.
I remember just not even caring. Sort of similar to you. I hadn't read all of those books, but I remember thinking, oh, Black Cauldron, that's cool. And then I saw it, and it was just, oh, meh, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I've watched it a couple of times, and I keep saying, why isn't this good? You know?
Get better! Start hitting the TV. Why is this not working? It's not.
Maybe it'll be better the fourth time I see it.
Matt Anderson from the Sci-Fi Christian said, there is nothing greater than Lion King. Great story, great characters, great music. The total package.
I knew I liked Matt.
My problem with Lion King is that the whole thing about how we become, you know, when we die, we become the grass. We become nothing.
But it's true.
It's just a big circle. Our bodies do, but that's not us. That's only for animals.
It is. Okay, it's true for the animals.
And there you go.
And a little bit true for us.
Animals don't become cloud ghosts and talk to us.
I thought it was a very symbolic, you know, Heavenly Father type of, you know, message in there as well.
I just thought it was a ripoff of Hamlet. Yeah. And
it is very similar to Hamlet.
So Mickey Kitt on Facebook replied, Lion King is a good riff on Hamlet. Beauty and the Beast might be the most aesthetically complete. Personal favorite, probably Pinocchio, because the spelling challenge it presents. It's also one of the easiest stories to see Christ in. The creator leaves his home to save Pinocchio, being thought dead in the belly of the beast, only to reemerge and not only restore his rebellious creation, but make him better and more real than he had been before. And then he says, best music goes to Jungle Book. Can't beat Louis Prima.
Yep.
Louis Prima?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dave Goulet said, as a kid, I was obsessed with The Rescuers. As an adult, I think I like Aladdin the best for sheer Robin Williams fun factor. And then Hank Harwell pulls a Steve and says, would Pete's Dragon count?
Yeah.
Answer, no, Hank.
No.
Maybe.
Thanks,
Hank.
If we're not going to let John Carter in, then we're not going to.
Honorable mention is Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah. Bud Rogers said, Sleeping Beauty, gorgeous design work and graceful animation. Second fave, Fantasia.
Boo. I fell asleep just now.
Like Fantasia 3, the quest for Porky's gold. Or was it? How was it?
What?
It was something.
I don't even. Okay. Paul Lewis says, I've always been partial to the original Fantasia. It was really a very amazing accomplishment to capture classical music, then to dramatize it using animation. Not to mention, there are scenes in Fantasia that stick with me to this day. And I would have to agree with that, too, about the scenes sticking with you to this day.
Well, I'm sorry. I think that's the perfect thing for me to go to bed on. So if you guys play Fantasia, that would be a perfect going to sleep music.
Travis Daisy Morrell says Robin Hood because it has Robin Hood and Little John walking through the forest, laughing back and forth at what the others had to say, reminiscing this and that and having such a good time. Oodalali, oodalali, golly, what a day. And then Michael Poteet, I don't know what he was doing. I think maybe he didn't read the question. He says, my favorite Disney movie really and truly is John Carter. Say what you will, I love The Thing. It was the first movie I wanted to see twice and made an effort to see twice in the theatrical run since Star Trek First Contact all the way back in 96.
And my boy, there's more animation in John Carter than many of the movies we discussed tonight, and it is a Disney release.
It is just criminal that Disney botched the marketing so badly. I hope time will be kind to John Carter. It's a rich film, fantastically envisioned, and masterfully executed. Then he says, it just occurred to me since the big Lucas Disney announcement, I guess I could say my favorite Disney film is The Empire Strikes Back.
Again, animated.
I will go with him on everything he said about John Carter, except I just can't accept it because it's not animated.
It's live action.
Would you allow Pete's Dragon, Daniel?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I probably would. And the reason I say that is I have to allow Song of the South, so if I'm going to allow Song of the South, I have to let Pete's Dragon in.
Yeah, well, Mary Poppins would be a gray area. I think you could kind of squeak that one in. But Pete's Dragon, I don't know. That's just too...
We should have our own show of, like, you know, live action with animation. It should be its own show.
Yeah, that would actually
that's
make
the plan.
A decent
we're
going to
do a Pixar show, and then we're going to do a live action Disney. So yeah. We've got to save those.
First, we've got a couple other things we have to do. But Daniel, I would like you to please let us know where we can find you with your Between Disney blog and the Sci-Fi Christian. And tell us a little bit about what Between Disney is.
So what Between Disney is partially a inspired by Matt Anderson, because Matt Anderson does stuff and he gets stuff done. And one day, as I was on a vacation watching my child play on the Redwood Creek Challenge Trail at Disney California Adventure, I said, you know, I probably should just do something about all these Disney thoughts in my head. So what I did is I decided that I'm in between the two theme parks, and I'm always thinking about what Disney movie's coming next. So I was Between Disney. So I started up BetweenDisney.com is my blog, where I talk about Disney-related stuff. Usually there's a book review a week. And then usually I'll talk about how I get through not being on vacation, or Disney things that I see in other movies that are largely unintentional. And I can be found right there at BetweenDisney.com, or you can find me on Facebook.com/BetweenDisney, and I'm on Twitter as @BetweenDisney. And then I'm also on the Sci-Fi Christian as an occasional host.
or as Ben DeBono calls you, the B Squad.
The B Squad.
Yeah. So that's classy.
Yeah. He calls us the C Squad.
Yeah, I know.
He thinks you should be proud for that.
Yeah, well. He thinks a lot of things. So.
He does.
He's always thinking.
But for like a sci-fi audience, again, there's so much Disney sci-fi right now between Marvel and Star Wars and even John Carter. I mean, you're going to find on my on the blog a review of a book called John Carter and the Gods of Hollywood that literally will break down every piece of failure when it comes to John Carter.
Wow.
And I mean, when you read this, how badly Disney botched it, it's a tragedy.
And you got lucky, man, with Star Wars. You can totally write about that on your blog now.
I was very, very happy. I could write about it a little bit because of Star Tours.
That's true.
But that just opened the gate, because for me, the acquisitions of Marvel and Star Wars was putting two of my favorite childhood things under my favorite company. So I literally stopped breathing when I saw that they acquired Lucasfilm.
Wow.
All right. Well, our next episode is going to be an intro to the space trilogy, and specifically an intro to C.S. Lewis's book, Out of the Silent Planet. And we're going to be talking. Dr. Jace has not read this book. Steve and I have, and we're going to just kind of talk about its origins, where it came from, what you need to know if you're going to read it, and why you should read it. And I do understand, Daniel, you have not read this book.
I have not.
And I know Matt Anderson has not. So they are going to be reading it with us, because it's the second month of the C.S. Lewis year of C.S. Lewis. Wait, 2013, year of C.S. Lewis. Second month starts. Well, by the time you hear it, it'll be February. And we're reading Out of the Silent Planet, one of my favorite books. I like it. It's a good one.
It's a lot of fun.
So that's our next episode. That's what we'll be talking about. If you would like to contact us, you can call us, leave us a voicemail at 1-840-37-ALIEN. And if you would like to talk to us about Disney, or if you would like to talk to us about Out of the Silent Planet, we would love to hear your feedback. 1-840-37-ALIEN. You can also email us at podcast@strangersandaliens.com. And you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/strangersandaliens, Twitter, we're Strange and Alien. And yeah, we'd love to hear from you. As you can hear, we like the feedback. It's just, unfortunately, Shazbot died. So we'll bring him back to life. Yeah, I think that's it then. Anything else you guys want to add? Okay, good. You want to say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yes, young ladies, don't stay with the beast.
That's right. Transform him into the hero that you know he is inside.
Or you could go in between and have spiritual discernment and make sure, you know, because we all have a beast side. And what is he doing with that beast side? What's he going to do with that? If it's not going away, then you need to get away.
Yeah. How about that? We can agree on that, right, Dr. Jace?
If it allows me to go to bed, yeah.
Wow. All we have to do is keep him up late enough and he'll agree to anything.
All right. Godspeed.